It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. This is episode 2, Electric Boogaloo, and we'll now have 1 week of regular season games in the books. I'm Ben Ostro, founder and editor-in-chief of Football Zebras, joined by editor Cam Philippe and our writer and analyst Chris Soyberg. So this is a roundtable discussion. It's not quite a round table tonight. We tape on Monday nights, and it just happens that the rest of the usual participants are officiating high school games. This underscores the crisis in officiating, which is at the lower levels, and games are being scheduled beyond Friday nights and Saturdays. In addition, crews are shrinking. And if the supply is low at high school and Division III college games, this will be a problem at the FBS level and the NFL in a generation or less. So let's kind of talk about our go-to topic every year. We do touch on this quite a bit, is this crisis that we are having at in officiating.
It's something we've seen now for almost a decade, if not longer, and it's not just affecting football, it's affecting all sports. But sticking with our wheelhouse here, I just had my first game of the high school season, and it was on a Thursday night. And a few years ago, that's something that wasn't typical. So obviously schools are doing whatever they can to try to get the games in. But especially in my part of the country, it's limited a lot based off of officiating availability, which has not improved in, I'd say, the last... Well, I started doing high school in 2021. So since then, there have been problems. I remember my first varsity game, we ran a 4-man crew as opposed to a 5-man crew just because of the shortage at that time. And we were just coming out of the intense parts of the pandemic. So, yeah, it's something that doesn't seem like it's going to be improving anytime soon, which, again, in a generation from now, as you previously alluded to, it could lead to some potential problems at the higher levels.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing how many games are being moved around, especially in Michigan. You know, we have games on Saturdays, like Ben said. We have games on Sundays. We have youth games all over the place. You know, we're fortunate, actually, in the Detroit metro area, in the conferences I work, we do have 7-man on varsity. But that was that's a relatively new occurrence.
Jealous.
Know, I started probably 5 or 6 years ago. I know. Well, it's funny because, you know, the other thing that brings, you know, these officiating shortages is lack of pay, right? You know, a lot of these Friday night varsity games, you're getting there over an hour, hour and a half early before the game. You get at least a 2-hour game and then, you know, whatever long it takes you to get home. So, you know, for 4 hours to get, you know, $60 to $75 wasn't great. So this year, actually, we did get a substantial boost in our pay in the Michigan area or in the Detroit metro area. We're up to, you know, upwards of $100 to $115 for varsity and $90 to $95 for JV. And we had our local association meeting and, you know, we do it every year. How many new officials are there, right? And we actually had, thankfully, quite a few new officials. And I don't know if it was the money thing, you know, sometimes it is, or if it's more people getting in. It's funny, I got into officiating when I was younger. I'm sure, you know, Cam, you did as well, right? Trying to get my kids to officiate sports is not happening. they see us out there. They see us getting yelled at. You know, they play sports. They know, and they're like, "Nope, want no part of that." And that is a concern. You know, getting younger folks into officiating is really tricky.
I teach the new officials course for our local high school association. I'm in my second year now doing that. And the past 2 years, we've had 8 new officials in each of the last 2 seasons, which for us is pretty good. And the majority of them have stayed on. But again, you hear stories about, you know, the officials have been there for decades who have started in, you know, the late 90s, early 2000s, where their candidates classes is what they're referred to up here, candidates classes. Those were between 20 and 30 just a couple decades ago. And now we're down to under 10. So again, as I always say to the new officials, and some, obviously I've been involved in officiating for, I'd say, about half of my life. It's not, we don't do it for the money, but it's a nice little side perk. I relay to an old NFL Films feature that was done in the early 2000s. I think it may have been in 2000 with referee Johnny Greer's crew. And the replay official at the time, or the video assistant, whatever it was called back then, Larry Hill, he had made a comment to Steve Sable about, oh, I thought you just did it because you liked it. The pay was a bonus. So that's how I feel about it. But yeah, and to bounce off of that, I'm from Massachusetts, in the Massachusetts High School Association, the MIAA, we make for football for varsity, it's 105. But we've been doing, it goes up by about $3 every year. So even when I was starting, again, three seasons ago, I think it was 97 at that time still. So again, it's very different across the country, but you know, it all depends on, I guess, the area that you're originating from, the area in the country you live.
So let me just ask, what kind of outreach do you see at like the local level? And there's things that we're plugged into and we see a lot of ourselves, but it's probably not reaching the right people. And we also see in the NFL, we do see a turnaround of former players now coming back to the NFL. And originally I was skeptical because I didn't think that it was appropriate to have a fast track for players. So maybe that's not necessarily at the NFL level, but even the myriad of athletes at the college level, not everybody's going to the NFL. Is there something that you see locally, at least, to try and maybe get former players, even those high school players that are not going on to play college ball, to get them interested in officiating at least?
So a couple years ago, the high school board that I'm a member of and part of the board of directors of is based in a city in Massachusetts called Taunton. It's about 40 minutes south of Boston. And we're lucky that at the high school in that city, Taunton High School, they started an officiating course in the high school. It's part of the curriculum as an elective course that can be taken. And it got some good publicity about a year or two ago when it first was formed. Our rules interpreter for our association is an administrator for the Taunton Public Schools, and they were able to get an officiating class. And, you know, it's a class that any high school student can take that lasts a whole year, and you get the experience of being able to officiate multiple different sports and learning about mechanics. And what we teach in those new classes, new officials classes, that's being taught as a high school class for a grade in high school, which I think is amazing. I think it should be offered in more places around the country because this was one of the first. And they recently had a clinic this past summer to kind of prepare those students that had signed up for the class for this current academic year. And former NFL down judge Jim Mello was there. He is from Massachusetts as well, just retired after working his 20th year last season. He was one of the many professional officials across, you know, they had a good handful from a myriad of different sports, but he was like the representative for, you know, high level and professional football officiating. And I think something like that to kind of shake the stigma of you make little money, you get yelled at for 2.5 to 3 hours, and then you go home. Introducing that to those high school players, because I'm sure a lot of those students in that class are currently playing high school sports. If they don't have that track to college sports, that could be another way to stay close to the game. So I think something like that would be a tremendous boost to officiating as a whole across all sports across the country.
Yeah, Michigan has a similar, actually we have a program, it's called the Legacy Program for MHSAA, and it's literally that. It's, you know, we have 9th and 10th grade students can officiate middle school, so they get certified. There are schools that have classes as well, like you said, Cam. And it gets them out there. And that's kind of how I started. I played soccer when I was younger. And it's like, hey, I can officiate this and do this. So I kind of did both, right? And I think, I mean, again, I think, Cam, when we run into the football players, hilariously, the linemen are some of the nicest guys out there. They're some of the smartest guys out there, right? And they would make great officials. You know, I think they would. And it just I think once they're done playing, that is the natural pathway. If they don't want to, you know, assistant coach or coach or whatnot. Yeah. Officiating is a great way for them to stay involved. And more programs that encourage that is really how we need to attack the problem.
And that's an interesting thing that there's a competing coach, assistant coach track as well. To me, it seems like that could be something that's very easily supplied and not so much with officiating. So, but it's good to hear that there are some of these programs out there. They are resonating. And yeah, it's definitely that gap that, you know, if it had been an easy solve, it would have been solved. And like you say, it's multiple things. It's not so much the pay, like you say, you have to do it if you want to do it, but it's dealing with the increasing number of fans that are just, you know, just getting really, really bad, really out of hand. But it's reaching that student athlete at the right time, or for that matter, even just somebody, just getting somebody, not necessarily a student athlete. I mean, I lament that the timing never worked out for me, that I never went on the field. There was just various different factors. And maybe if I had been given the bug a little early in my year. So let's switch gears a little bit, and we'll go to a topic we discussed last week. And only after one episode of the podcast, I already have a freezing cold take. Let's listen.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's interesting, too. You know, I think on the college side, if we go shorthanded, we pretty much always take out the back judge and fill in. It's interesting to see how the NFL crews do it a little differently at times.
I think that generally, I mean, you obviously don't leave the referee position free. And I think you always keep somebody as an umpire and the down judge.
Just 3 days after that dropped, we had a crew leave the umpire position vacant on the Friday game in Brazil. Field judge Ryan Dixon was out for a series. Seems like trainers were working on his calf, but then he returned to the game, missing only 10 or so plays. But what was very interesting was they put Barry Anderson, the umpire, deep and left the umpire position open. And you had Ron Torbert in the backfield and, you know, with the quarterback responsibilities. But then as soon as the play is over, he's there to make sure that they got a spot on the ball, hovering over the ball. What are your thoughts about how they handled that vacancy there?
So I think as much as in terms of shifting the crew, it was a little bit of a surprise. The fact that Barry Anderson was the umpire in this game and that he was moved to a deep wing position was not a surprise. That's where he started his career. He was a field judge and side judge for a handful of years before moving to the umpire position. So that didn't surprise me. I think I remembered watching a recap. Again, Friday night, I wasn't watching that game live, but when I ended up catching up later, I saw, oh, they left the umpire position open due to an injury, and they moved the umpire to a deep wing. I thought, that doesn't make any sense. And then I looked back and double-checked who the umpire was, and it was Barry Anderson, who worked as a deep wing at the start of his career. So that itself wasn't a surprise. And after reviewing some of that, some of the footage from that drive or that series, another thing that I noticed was that the short wing officials, Frank LeBlanc and Brian Bollinger, were kind of crashing in a little harder on spots to kind of just, you know, they were moving inside the numbers with their spots, which is something you typically don't see. You usually see them come to the numbers or stay a little bit further back, stay more wide. But just looking at those plays, they were coming in a little bit further to kind of assist if needed with spotting of the football, because again, that lied specifically on Torber as being the only official in the backfield. So I guess it's kind of a hindsight's 20/20 situation where, you know, a week or so ago we had looked at it as, you know, this is probably something that's not going to happen. They're not going to give that umpire position up. But even though it was only for a handful of plays, it looked like they were able to manage it well.
And to be fair, and not to, you know, give us a little credit, we did say during that last episode that most of these crews are adapting depending on the personnel and who goes down, right? So I think a lot of the preseason when they went to, you know, the six-man trials, different positions were moved depending on who was there. So And it seems like that's what this crew did as well, right? They moved people around as they saw fit. But yeah, that was definitely a surprise when it happened. And Torbert, you know, doing all the work of an umpire and a referee for a little while, at least. Yeah, it was probably not how he wanted to spend his time in Brazil, but, you know.
Well, and I appreciate the lifeline there on the take. And then on top of that, you had Ron Torbert. I don't know what it was, multiple penalties, losing his voice throughout. So let's go and go back one game. One of those things that was hard to miss in that kickoff game between the Chiefs and Ravens was the number of illegal formation fouls. So we had the Ravens called for 4 of them on Thursday. All of them, I believe, were the same linemen, or at least most of them, and just being too far off the line and too far, cheating too far into the backfield. We looked through the stats. Quirky Research helped us a little bit on that. We had the Browns with 3 that were not kickoff related. One of those was a lineman. Another one was a receiver who might have been confused who was on the line and who was not. And then the third was just the typical garden variety covering the receiver. So that wasn't related to the rule change. But in that case, 1, maybe 2 were also related to the linemen. And nobody really had more than 1 of those illegal formations, and most of them were on the kickoff. So we were anticipating, all right, if we see 3 in the first quarter, 4 of them, this is something we're going to see a lot of during the season. But we just did not see that carry forward into the rest of the game. So I guess it caught everyone's attention or what? I'm not sure. What did you guys see?
Yeah, I mean, it was, I guess, not surprising. Again, I was going to kind of lead this into a whole points of emphasis thing, right? So, you know, typically when these come down, I think the officiating crews typically inform the teams and they all know what's coming, right? Hey, these are the points of emphasis for this year. You know, this is what to look out for. And I think the fact that there was the single game for everyone to see that, you know, Hockley's crew was very intent on, you know, hitting Ronnie Stanley in that first half, I think put everyone on notice for the rest of the weekend. And it looks like, based on the numbers, they paid attention, right? There weren't very many penalties after that. So typically, you know, the referees hit it early in the season, and then, you know, you go to message boards, right? They usually say, oh, did the referees stop calling it? Typically, no, the teams figure it out, right? And then they move up a little bit and everybody's happy and the points of emphasis are being enforced as there should be. And I think that's what happened here probably faster than not because, you know, it ruins drives, right? Typically, all these happen, the obvious ones happen on plays where, hey, it's a 30-yard pass play. Oh, we have an illegal formation and that kills a drive, right? So I think for the weekend games, that really affected everyone's play and it worked out in the end. And hopefully going forward, you know, everyone and pays attention to that and we don't have any more of these crazy illegal formation penalties.
When it's highlighted in not just a primetime nationally televised game, but also the first game of the season, it does tend to explode. It's everyone's first taste of real football for this year. And everyone's thinking, oh my God, we're seeing so many illegal formation penalties. I mean, I personally think, again, they're all on the same player. There were 3 or 4, there were 4. That is a lot. Yes, it is a point of emphasis. It was a small editorial change to kind of have a focus on it. But I feel like the fact that if that had happened in one of the 1 o'clock games yesterday or Sunday, whenever, depending on when you're listening to this, I don't think it would have been noticed as much, if I'm being honest, because I believe Cleveland in their game yesterday also had a ton, and you don't hear as many people talking about that. So I think it was just more of a highlight on the fact that it was a larger audience. But again, the rule itself hasn't changed. The head of the lineman or anyone, the head of anyone that needs to be on the line is going to have to break the belt line of the center. So we've seen building in years past, you know, to improve pass blocking, they're going to cheat back a little bit, especially the tackles. So, you know, it's good to see it called the right way because obviously it gains a competitive advantage. I would say most people understand why that should be an emphasis point, but again, the rule hasn't changed. So I think it's a little bit of big time game, big name official. I'll also kind of possibly throw that out there. A lot of people have opinions about Sean Hockley, whether they're good or not so good. I think he's one of the best in the league. I'll just put that out there for the end of the season when he gets a Super Bowl. Hint, hint, maybe for my predictions at the end of the season. But, you know, I think that it kind of lends to that big explosion of discussion as well.
Yeah, it's funny to go full circle and come back to high school again. I was amazed during our first week how many tackles were off the line, kind of like the NFL, right? You know, between equipment and whatnot, it's funny to watch these things trickle down. And they were off the line on running plays, which was hilarious. It's like, guys, you don't want to be off the line for pass blocking when you're doing a running play. So these points of emphasis will definitely help us on Friday nights too. Not that it's the most important thing in the world, but I thought it was an interesting observation from at least our first weeks out on the field for ourselves.
Yeah, we have a post what the differences were in the off season, and basically you have to be on the line or off the line. It's been one of these situations where there's been a little bit of interpretation. Okay, you're close. Yeah, you're right, kind of aligned with the guy next to you, so we'll let it kind of slide. And then it just started, as I said on Thursday night, it's like a bowing of the line there. So when you get into these pass situations, it does become an advantage because you have that extra little bit of room in your attack to block. And I think that it became something, and I did have this thrown back at me where people were saying, well, for years you're saying you don't want more flags. And I think the answer is we reached the tipping point. The competition committee says, look, we let you go. And, you know, now you've literally bent it to the point of breaking. So they couldn't do anything in the middle of the season last year. So next opportunity is in the off season. And the other thing is I got all sorts of screenshots with lines drawn on them. It was funny. Some of those straight lines were very very crooked, or how the plane of a line works when you're looking 10 yards downfield. It does get quite amusing. But and also I think the receivers are going to be handled different. You got your interior lineman. You're not expecting some wide out who's on the line to be aligned with the snapper's belt. She's going to look over to the wing official, and it's like, are you presenting yourself on the line? Are you presenting yourself off the line? I think it's more of just being very clear about that, because with all of this mixing, I think some teams have gotten some advantages out of that.
I have to assume there's some conversations going on with, like, again, the umpire and the referee and those linemen outside of the flags, right? I mean, it's like, hey, you're close, guys. You need to move up. And eventually, again, like you said, the officials reach a breaking point. It's like, all right, I'm just going to flag you because you're not listening anymore. And that happens at all levels, and I have to imagine it happens in the NFL too. So,
yeah, we even highlighted on preventive officiating, which, you know, can be a topic for another day, because we know that we have one that will be our call of the week this week. But basically, making sure that the players on the field are not committing fouls, giving them the tools to do their thing so that you're not enforcing through flags, you're just enforcing through, you know, light touch. You flag the things that are way out of compliance, but if you see something start to creep in, get that word into them. I think we even have a clip from a few years ago with Tim Pedraza. No, it wasn't. It was Tim Pedraza. Okay, he was on the line and called out that, hey, look, you were off by a little bit. I need you to scoot up a little. And just in that one clip, it showed like, hey, this is, you had the coach there, you had the player, you had the official, and they were all working together. Because when it really comes down to it is all three of them are working to make this game entertaining for everyone. Yes, they want to win, but it still comes down to that entertainment. Everybody's got that same goal to have this game look good. So that wraps up another episode of the First and 25 podcast. Many thanks to Cam Philippe, Chris Soibert. I'm Ben Ostro. We'll be dropping a new episode every Tuesday throughout the season. Please spread the word. If you're listening on the Football Zebras website, you can also find us on your preferred podcasting app. And please subscribe. Thanks for listening. We'll be back, hopefully, with a few more of us to discuss officiating from NFL Week 2.